national need.
Military has answered the call for help. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb embedded with a small U.S. military team training Gabonese park rangers to get an inside look into the fight to save Gabon's forest elephants.
Overwhelming power, overpowered by greedy men, willing to kill for their ivory.
We've been shot at.
We are now in war.
What's at stake is the future of Gabon.
If we don't beat the poachers, Gabon will go the way of CAR. We will lose our country.
In this tiny Central African nation, park rangers called Eco Guards man the front lines. And the U.S. military has answered their call for help.
We not only help them preserve the wildlife, but at the same time, we're disrupting criminal organizations and we're helping them develop a better future.
There's a hill here, maybe.
Donk.
And then this is coming up. So what does that mean for the objective?
Donk.
VOA is the first reporting team to embed with the U.S. military on a counter-poaching mission. We followed a small army team to see how American training and resources are strengthening the rangers.
In some of the parks, they already are a true paramilitary force. They're having gun battles about once a month.
This is the fight for Gabon's forest.
Asparagus. I eat everything that gorillas eat.
What's it taste like?
This tastes like, it's like cucumber, I guess.
For biologist Lee White, the nation's minister of forest, Gabon is a paradise.
When you see elephants walking out onto the beach in Luango, and then you see a humpback whale breaching in the background, then you think to yourself, is this real?
Yeah.
But that's Gabon. That's what Gabon is like.
Gabon is home to more forest elephants than anywhere else in the world. But over the past couple of decades, they've been killed by poachers by the tens of thousands.
Tragically, we've lost about 70% of the forest elephants of Central Africa in the last 15 years. But between Gabon and northern Congo, we're the only places that are really hanging on.
Gabon's vast rainforests cover almost the entire country, making it a perfect home for the African forest elephant. Unlike their cousins that thrive in the savannas of eastern and southern Africa, forest elephants of West and Central Africa are smaller, with straight tusks rather than curved ones to better maneuver in dense trees and underbrush. Female forest elephants do not start breeding until they are more than 20 years old, leading wildlife experts to estimate that it takes more than 50 years for the species to double their population. According to the World Wildlife Fund, poachers kill at least 20,000 African elephants each year for their tusk, despite a ban on international ivory trade. Forest elephants have been hit the worst. The World Wildlife Fund's biomonitoring report indicates there are now less than 10,000 forest elephants in Central Africa. The Democratic Republic of the Congo, the Central African Republic, and Cameroon have all lost more than 90% of their forest elephant populations since 2011. Gabon and the Republic of the Congo now hold Africa's largest forest elephant populations. Gabon's elephant population is down about a third, a blow that's been lessened due to increased resources for conservation.
I had about 100 staff. I had no cars. So managing 13 national parks in a country the size of the UK with no cars is quite a struggle. You have to hitchhike to get to the parks. And we went from a budget of about $500,000 a year to $25 million.
Since 2007, Gabon's national parks have grown from about 100 eco-guards on the payroll to more than 850.
Parce que pour faire un travail comme celui-là, ça demande beaucoup des efforts physiques, ça demande beaucoup de sacrifices et il faut beaucoup de motivation.
Nous avons le devoir aussi de pouvoir préserver cet écosystème, cette nature, cette biodiversité pour les générations futures comme ceux, nos prédécesseurs, donc nos anciens parents.
C'est lui là. Ah, il n'est pas bébé.
Si j'entends, il y a les éléphants devant, il y a les gorilles. Il y a un piton ici, je n'ai aucun problème. Mais si j'entends qu'il y a les voix des humains à 15 km, où je vois des coupes de machettes fraîches, très loin, là, je suis réellement en danger.
Yeah, the level of violence has been rising the last 5 years or so. Until about 5 years ago, we'd never had anybody shot at. Now it's commonplace. We had some illegal gold miners who were also doing poaching, tried to kill our technical director, Hubert Hilary Koga, a couple of months ago. He went into a camp and they immediately opened fire on him.
You know, it's a war. I am talking about a band of 20 to 50 people in the forest with AK-47, 4.5F rifle, 3.75 rifle. So it's complicated in the forest.
Menkebe National Park is considered the most dangerous post for eco-guards. Bordered by Congo to the east and Cameroon to the north, poachers flood the park and escape capture by darting across the river to another country. Narcisse Baba Obame is the patrol chief there.
Avant de partir en patrouille, on a toujours peur parce que, comme je vous dis au parc de Menkebe, quand vous rentrez, vous savez pas si vous allez sortir. Chez nous là-bas à Menkebe, vous pouvez vous croiser directement avec les braconniers. C'est pas, ça veut dire on a un indice, on dit il y a des braconniers à tel endroit et puis arriver. Vous pouvez marcher, vous êtes sur une piste et vous croisez le braconnier et directement le feu est rentré. Ça arrive. Donc, pour vous dire franchement, je suis un être humain, quand je rentre en mission, je suis toujours stressé. Mais comme c'est mon boulot et j'aime mon boulot, je suis obligé de bien le faire.
Today, even some of the safest parks are under attack.
The Cameroonian poachers are now at the north of Lopé, so at 40 kilometers from here, and at the north of Ivindo National Parks. They have crossed Menkebe. They are around Minzik. Minzik is at less than 100 kilometers from here. So this is why all the elephants are going to the coast, because they are afraid by these poachers.
As a new day in Lope begins, this cadence brings hope because these eco-guards are training to be the leaders of the counter-poaching fight. And they're not alone.
Could somebody brief your medical plan?
A group of U.S. soldiers are here to increase their chances of survival.
So generally the route we're going to take to do this patrol is leaving the Sedum, head to the main road, and then head south across this bridge.
Today, the Americans have created an exercise to find and capture a group of men posing as poachers inside the park.
I'm ready.
Yeah.
Army Captain Kevin Chapla leads the team.
But if an injury does happen in real life, all the training stops. So I would just advise you guys to watch where you're stepping. We've seen like giant snakes down there. So if you get bit by something, just bring it to our attention and we'll proceed accordingly. So right now our training patrol has, they're about 200 meters from the objective, the suspected camp of about four poachers. From here, they're probably gonna send out a recon element, see what they can see, come back, develop a plan, and then raid the suspected poaching camp.
Oh, mais les gars sont armés.
U.S.-led counter-poaching training operations like this one began in Tanzania in 2009, officials say, and U.S. military efforts started in Gabon in 2018.
Our core mission really is to build the capability of our African partners through training. So anything that is criminal in nature has the capability to have linkages with violent extremist organizations and impact the ability of the government to get the critical programs and development to the people wherever they may be at.
Months of training has improved techniques to capture poachers and preserve evidence.
J'enlève les chaussures pour essayer de vérifier s'il n'y a pas des papiers cachés ou des informations qui peuvent nous mener à bien notre mission.
And first aid training is in high demand as poachers push deeper into Gabonese land.
Here at Lope National Park, it takes about 4 hours to drive to the nearest hospital. It takes even longer from some of the other parks. So for these eco guards, this medical training could be the difference between life and death.
Army Specialist Omar Soto is the team's medic.
Out of the past 15 months, I think I've been here 11, my goal was to basically teach them how to identify injuries that are basically could potentially take your life the quickest. Give them the tools to basically, or the knowledge to address the injuries accordingly.
Unlike previous counter-poaching training from other nations, Chapla says the U.S. mission with Gabon's National Park Agency, known as the ANPN, is designed to train future trainers. This small group will return to parks across Gabon, and their immediate job will be teaching their colleagues everything they've learned from the American team.
It's a proof of concept for them being able to instruct their own. And in fact, it's the first training sustainment capability that the ANPN has ever had, so it's pretty big.
Je crois qu'il y a un grand monsieur de ce monde qui a dit qu'il est mieux d'apprendre à quelqu'un à pêcher que de lui donner du poisson. Nous aurons toujours besoin de la coopération, mais nous pensons que pour ça, il est bon que nous soyons plus ou moins autonomes.
These eco guards are highly motivated individuals, and teaching them is not only is it fun, but it's easy. They're very willing to learn and willing to ask questions. And as an instructor, I don't think it gets any better than that.
C'est une formation très riche parce que en rentrant ici, on avait des attitudes un peu différentes d'aujourd'hui. On est devenu un peu plus professionnel.
And they need to be professional to have a fighting chance against the organized crime networks and terror groups they're facing.
You can trace the poachers who are killing those elephants back to Boko Haram.
The group has terrorized Nigeria and parts of West Africa, raiding villages, kidnapping hundreds of schoolgirls, and killing thousands of people as its leaders seek to create an Islamic caliphate.
As I said to the U.S. Embassy a few months ago, I say, boss, we have two solutions. We work together or we work on each side. But at the end, the attentat will be in your country, not in mine. But I agree. They will come in my country to take ivory or money and to prepare this attempt. So we will have to work together.
One thing not included in this mission, weapons training, something the Rangers say they desperately want. That's because until last year, the government didn't allow eco guards to carry weapons. And most still have to rely on military gendarmes to patrol with them for their defense, role played in the training by eco guards carrying sticks.
It's got to the point where, not in all parks, but in some parks, we have to arm the eco guards as well as the gendarmes. And I have initiated that the president supports it, and we are in the process of buying the guns.
Ça c'est ce qu'on a retrouvé sur les braconniers, sur celui-là. C'est pas si c'est le chef des braconniers ou pas, mais il a beaucoup de munitions.
Now you can't say to a poacher, oh sorry guys, stay quiet and give me your gun. Three months ago, we were not allowed to carry weapons. Now we have weapons, and the poaching is decreasing.
Officials hope these changes, along with additional international training and support, will accelerate Gabon's counter-poaching offensive. But time is running out for the elephants, and it may not be enough.
We're losing about 2 tons of ivory a month. That's about 150 elephants a month. So I'm proud that we've made the progress that we've made, but it's still catastrophic, so we still have to do more. You may win some battles, but the war keeps going.
Joining us today to talk about the counter-poaching effort to save the elephant in Gabon is Professor Lee White, who is Minister of Water and Forestry of the country, and Carla Barr, VOA's Pentagon correspondent. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Let me come to you, Carla Barr. You just had a report, a documentary on the counter-poaching effort in Gabon. Talk to me about the eco guards you met at the forefront fighting this rather serious fight against poachers.
Well, these were very determined park rangers. So as you said, in Gabon, they call the park rangers eco guards. That's the American accent in me saying it. It's echo guards if you have more of a French accent. And they really take their job seriously because they understand how big and how important the fight is for the forest elephants in their country. As you can see in the documentary, Gabon is home to more than half of the African forest elephant population. And so if Gabon can't keep it under control, then we really have a situation because Gabon has basically been holding it down, Gabon and Congo, while all of the countries around it have seen severe losses to their elephant populations. And I'm sure the minister that can talk about that much more. But when I was there, it was very interesting for me because I am the Pentagon correspondent, and so when I normally do embeds, the last embed that I had done in Africa before Gabon was in Burkina Faso, where they are fighting extremists, and I was embedded with a team that was teaching people in West Africa how to counter Islamic extremists and shoot and fight and plan that way. And so this was definitely a shift, a very different experience, because it was more on navigation. But then there was also that attack plan that was also being taught. How do you prepare? If you know that there are poachers, how do you use a map to get there appropriately? What do you need to do to make sure you can stop these poachers? And they were able to take that with them as well. And the best part about it is these eco guards weren't just learning from the Americans. They were learning how to teach it to other eco guards, to other park rangers. So it was training the trainers, which I thought was a really neat concept because it's not just about learning 20 eco guards learning something and then going back to wherever they are in the park. It's them taking that knowledge with them so they can then share it to 20 others and 20 others so they can all collectively have a better strategy and a plan to fight these poachers.
Knowledge transfer is certainly very important. Let me come to you, Professor Lee White. When did Gabon decide that, all right, it is time to combat these poachers? What necessitated it?
Yeah, in some ways, it snuck up on us. I think that, you know, Africa went through a major poaching crisis back in the 80s, but that really focused on the savannah elephant. So it was countries like Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda that were getting hit. And then the world reacted and CITES banned the export of ivory and so things slowed down. And then in 2006, I think it was, CITES allowed a one-off sale of ivory. And that sent a message to the poachers that things were cracking and that the commerce might reopen. And that was when poaching levels in the forests of Central Africa started going up. But the tragic thing is, in the rainforest, you don't see the wildlife for the trees. If you want, you can fly over a rainforest, and there might be hundreds of dead elephants, but you don't see any of them because they're underneath the forest canopy. So it's a very different scenario to the savannas, where what was going on was visible. And when I was appointed head of the national parks in 2009, we weren't really aware of what was going on out in the forest. It was as we started to deploy our echo guards into places like Minkebe in 2010, 2011, we discovered a huge illegal gold mining town, basically, in Minkebe National Park, with 7,000 illegal gold miners who were also doing a lot of ivory trafficking. And as we discovered these things, we realized that we had lost 25,000 elephants in Minkebe, which was our biggest elephant population, and that we were in threat of being overrun by these criminal poaching gangs. And that was when President Ali Bongo reacted, and he sent, initially he sent the army, the Beret Rouge, the parachute regiment, into Minkebe to close down the gold camp, and then started reinforcing the parks agency, giving us more means, more budget, more personnel, more equipment, and linking the park staff to the military to really attack this poaching problem and make sure that it didn't spread to the rest of our country. And as we did that, it's interesting, Carla saying that she's often looking more at terrorism than wildlife, but we discovered links from the poaching and the trafficking of ivory and gold being trafficked into Nigeria and being at least a cost center for Boko Haram terrorists and so on. And so you discover these links between organized gangs poaching ivory, trafficking gold, trafficking humans, and that makes its way up into these organized criminal groups and these terrorist groups. And so it was really when the president explained, because he understood it very quickly, but as people came to understand this link between the anti-poaching and actual peace and security and the stability of our country, was when we really went to war against the poachers and started turning things around. And unfortunately,
Professor Lee White, I'm not cutting you short, but are you therefore saying there's a political will? You have the president's backing to combat this menace in Gabon?
Absolutely. Political will is everything when it comes to natural resource governance. There's always going to be, whether it's ivory poachers or illegal loggers or illegal gold miners trying to make a quick buck off natural resources, and the way you can maximize your profits short term is to overexploit, to kind of like hit and run, take your money and run with it. For a country, we want these resources to be a sustainable source of revenue and jobs for our people for the rest of history. And so if you don't have that strong political will to put in place the strong institutions that you need to invest a bit of your government budget into protecting natural resources at the same time as you're educated, you're investing in education and health and so on, then all too often natural resources get neglected, and all too often the result is elephants disappear, forests disappear, the fisheries stocks disappear, and we realize kind of 5, 10, 15 years on, oh my God, we've lost this incredible treasure. And so President Ali Bongo Ondimba's commitment to anti-poaching and parks was really what saw us start to kind of turn the game and transform the Parks Agency into a professional agency run to international standards that is out there protecting natural resources and making sure that we have sort of law and order out in the wilds of Gabon.
Carla, let me come to you. Talking about the U.S. military cooperating or helping in the fight, against poachers in Gabon, what was the responses of the Echo Guards there and the enthusiasm that they showed? Because sometimes it could be dangerous. In one of the instances, they said some of these poachers can just open fire on them without them even realizing what is happening. Talk to me about your observation.
No, absolutely. There was a lot of encouragement from the Echo Guards as they were getting this training, because they knew that they were becoming more professional. In fact, Menkaibe, which is probably the most dangerous by far in Gabon when it comes to poachers carrying weapons, there was one of the park rangers from Menkaibe said, you know, I go in and every time I go in to do a scouting expedition, I worry that I'm going to see a park ranger. And he had multiple gunfights, and he felt that he was better prepared. But one thing that he was very concerned about, and that we bring up in the documentary, is that at that point, when I was there several months ago, they were not doing any weapons training. But as I was talking to the minister, the political will that he was talking about, the government has recognized that the Echo Guards alone, sometimes they need support with guns. They cannot depend on the military gendarmes in every situation. And so they had began arming them. And Mr. Ashley, if you want to take it from here and explain where you are from now, because I know that that process had just been starting when I was there with you several months ago. Are there more armed Echo Guards at this point, or is that still an ongoing process?
It's still an ongoing process. We have a Gendarmerie des Parcs Nationaux. So we have National Parks gendarmes who are from the military and are detached to the parks. And so they are better armed now. And we are going through the process of training and arming the Echo Guards. The military gendarmes have the sorts of guns that military tend to use, Kalashnikovs, whatever. The park rangers are using some version of a shotgun. And both of those weapons have kind of advantages and disadvantages in kind of the closed conditions of the forest, but they're both very effective. And so particularly for the rangers in the hot zones of Menkaibe and Mwanya, we are going through that process of arming them. And of course, you have to give people special training before you give them responsibility of carrying a gun. So that's all happening. And in some of our parks, there's absolutely no poaching at all. And so we don't need to give our Echo Guards guns in those parks. And so we're having to balance as a function of where we are moving the Echo Guards who are more scientific, maybe more sensitive to the parks with less threat, and the very strong characters who are more military in their demeanor into the parks where we have problems.
Minister White, what has been some of the success stories since your government launched this counteroffensive against these poachers?
Well, for us, poaching and illegal gold mining go hand in hand. So closing down the illegal Menkaibe gold mine with 7,000 illegal immigrants was a huge victory, both against the illegal gold, but all of that illegal gold was funding illegal ivory at the same time. And so we moved 7,000 potential poachers out of the forests and outside of Gabon. We've continued to run operations like that. We've had great success in bringing in our intelligence community. And so now there's a very good collaboration between the parks and the intelligence community when it comes to intelligence gathering, which enables us to to cut the poachers off before they kill the elephants. That's, you know, we went from getting better and better at catching them after they'd killed the elephants, but the elephants are still dead. And then we've started becoming better at actually heading them off and stopping them before they kill the elephants, which is obviously what we really want to do, to keep the elephants alive. And so there have been multiple big arrests. One of the biggest traffickers in Gabon is currently in custody, actually in Cameroon in this case, but we're working with the Cameroonian authorities to make sure that their prosecution goes through smoothly. And so just more and more cases of arrests and professional prosecutions. And then last year, the government adopted a new penal code. We reformed the penal code that dated back to the 60s, and so was written before really the idea of organized crime or terrorism or even commercial poaching existed. And so by updating our penal code, the penalty for ivory poaching went from a maximum of 6 months to a minimum of 4 years. And any poaching involving organized crime or transnational crime automatically goes up to a minimum of a 10-year jail sentence. So that was a huge victory in terms of deterrent and being able to efficiently prosecute these criminals.
Minister White, let me ask you this. In your earlier submission, you talked about intelligence gathering. How is the Gabonese population being educated to share information with the authorities, including the Echo Guards, in order for them to do their work effectively? Because sometimes, I understand, they live among the population and then they go into these forests to kill these wild animals or dig for gold, illegal mining and all that. So how is the government, looking at some of these issues about cooperation from the Gabonese population so you can have the intelligence you need in your fight against these illegal miners and poachers?
Actually, for the most part, the Gabonese people are respectful of the law and understand that elephants are protected. Most of our poaching is transnational. It's people crossing international borders, going into remote national parks. And those people, you know, they're organized gangs sometimes of 30 or 40 poachers and porters. And those people tend to avoid Gabonese villages because they know that if they do go through a village, then the people are going to report them. The people are going to call the mayor or the member of parliament or the local police and warn them that a gang of gun-toting people have just come through the village. And so as a rule, these poaching gangs avoid human population centers, and the Gabonese people don't really meet them. The biggest impact on the Gabonese people is that because the elephants are being persecuted out in the national parks, the elephants are fleeing from these poachers. That means that the poachers do eventually come closer to people. And we have had some incidents of poaching gangs stealing from local communities, stealing food and even robbing local communities. But the biggest impact we're seeing is that the elephants that have fled the poachers are coming into people's villages and raiding people's crops. And so the poaching issue is creating a secondary issue, which is a massive increase in human-elephant conflict, because these elephants, which are now refugees that have fled the forest to get away from the poachers, are banging up against populations and farms and so on. And the Gabonese people are an innocent bystander, an innocent victim of this war against criminality.
And so the park rangers have actually done something about that too, and I was able to see that firsthand when I was in Lope. I went to an electric fence that the government had built to keep the elephants away from some of the villages. Because this problem has become, you know, so dire, the villagers, they understand the importance of the elephants and they understand the importance of catching the poachers. But it does get frustrating when you've got all of these mango trees getting raided by elephants in your village that you needed. So this was a solution that they said, okay, we still want to make sure that the public remains on our side. So they took the initiative and started building these electric fences to keep them out. And when I was there and I was talking to the villagers, they were saying, yes, this is working. We like this. So that was definitely a success story there too. Again, something that was very proactive by the Gabonese government that I was able to see, you know, as an aside, as I was going through the village one day.
Carla, let me talk to you about the Pentagon officials that you interacted with while you were there in Gabon. What were some of their major takeaways after the training and pieces of advice and mentoring? What were some of their major takeaways that he spoke to you about?
Well, the small team really enjoyed the opportunity to be able to share their knowledge. I mean, let's talk about the entire military presence. The U.S. military presence in Africa is spread out. I mean, the bulk is in Djibouti, the Camp Lemonnier area. There's about 4,000 there, but there are 6,000 U.S. troops spread throughout Africa. And so once you get out of the Djibouti area, then you've got several hundred in Somalia, Kenya, that area fighting al-Shabaab. Then you have the group of several hundred in West Africa, in the Niger, Burkina Faso area, fighting Boko Haram and the Islamic extremists there. That I think DOD just issued a few months ago saying that there were about 25 Islamist extremist groups across Africa. But so once you get past that part, then you have small teams going out and doing nation building activities and basically going to countries and saying, okay, what do you need from us? Because we're not here to tell you what you need to do. We need to know what you need. And some countries have asked for help with rule of law. How do the military and the civilian governments work together? Well, when it came to Gabon, Gabon said, you know, we really have a problem with poaching. And is there some way that we can work together where you can help us with poaching? And Gabon actually wasn't the first. It started a little over a decade ago in Tanzania. And they've also done counter-poaching activities in Uganda, Botswana, Chad, Malawi. So this has gone on for many years, and it's gone on with several iterations in countries all across Africa. The concern that I have as a reporter is that I was part of one of the last counter-poaching activities because of coronavirus. So I was there in Gabon. There was also another one going on in Uganda that I think wrapped up in March or April of 2020 of this year. And then there haven't been any activities because the U.S. military has not been going out and doing those small activities like they used to. In fact, the big activities this year were also canceled in several areas as well. I was going to be embedded in Morocco on this big African lion exercise, and that was canceled. And they had to tell us a couple weeks before that at first they were going to try to make it smaller, and then they decided that they would continue with some of the activities they had initially already started, but then everything else was canceled until next year. So we really don't know what's going to happen in the coming months as coronavirus has continued to surge in countries like the United States and in Europe, which is where U.S. Army Africa is based, which is where AFRICOM is based. So we have to wait and see. And I am curious, Mr. Minister, if coronavirus has increased or decreased the amount of poaching that you've seen.
Actually, I don't think we've really seen any change in poaching activity. The COVID-19 hasn't been as virulent in Central Africa as it has in other parts of the world. I think partly because of the climate, it's hot and humid, and the virus doesn't do so well in hot, humid conditions. We have a very young population, which helps. And I think there's a certain amount of natural resistance because there are so many other coronaviruses in the wildlife here. And so we've not really been hit by kind of severe health issues in the Congo Basin. Obviously, the economy is down, which for some kind of tourist economies has been a severe impact on poaching, because it's tourist revenues that fund the poaching, the anti-poaching work, and a lot of people, kind of tourist workers who are now out of work, without a job, and are struggling to feed their families, have been resorting to poaching just to keep going. And so the fact that we don't have a major tourism industry in Gabon and the rest of the Congo Basin means that we haven't fallen foul to that issue. And so we have continued to work more or less as normal. And unfortunately, the poachers also. So it's sort of a status quo, really.
So, Minister White, you talked about the political will. Talk to me about the budgetary allocation for your ministry in order to, one, pay the Echo Guards very well, because just like the military, they are faced with sometimes very acute danger. And two, the equipment they need as part of this counter-poaching measures that your administration has launched.
Sure. Well, the government covers all of the salaries of the Echo Guards and some basic operational costs. And you know, you wouldn't say they're rich, but they're being paid salaries of about, you know, $500 to $600 a month on average, which is a reasonable salary in the African context. In addition to the money that the government puts in, then we have a lot of partners. One of our big partners is U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. That whilst we're paying for the salaries and the basic costs, they come in and help us with equipment and operations costs. And so what we try to do is we have a philosophy whereby we should be doing 50%, but that we feel that it's perfectly reasonable to ask the rest of the world to help us with the other 50%, given the incredible ecosystem services that the Congo Basin forests are providing to the planet.
So what are the prospects of the relationship between the U.S. military and the Gabonese Echo Guards, particularly after the coronavirus is dealt with?
I mean, we'd certainly like to see the U.S. military back. We find that these training sessions, in addition to the technical aspects, where they're, you know, we're not being trained to kill people, but we've been trained not to get killed. Basically, it's more self-defense than aggression, but we are very much encountering situations where poachers will shoot on sight, where Kalashnikovs and 458s are being directed towards our teams, and so they definitely do need to know, how to behave in order to minimize the risks and what to do when they are being shot at and how to respond to that. So that helps a lot. But also just the kind of the morale boost of this exchange with other, with military folk, with, having the US government come in and show that we are together and that we are supported in this battle, and that this battle is not just important for Gabon, but important for the rest of the world, is a great morale boost as well to our teams.
Carla, so what was it like for you in bed with the U.S. military, crisscrossing the forest, them, you know, showing you some of the activities of the poachers, seeing it firsthand, and what were some of the takeaways for you?
I loved it. I wish I could have stayed longer. I mean, you can get past the mosquitoes and the possibility of stepping on a snake, if you can get past that. That was a little squirmy for me. But just seeing these majestic creatures, I'll never forget the first time that I was able to see the elephants. And I was so close, and I wanted to just get as close as I could. And I remember somebody telling me, there's a baby, one of the elephants, it looked like it was a mother and a baby. And they said, there's a baby, so don't charge up there. Even though we were far distance, they said, don't try not to make any sudden movements, because this is the one time where the elephants are probably more squirmish because they want to protect their baby. But that, it was just so fascinating to me personally. I had seen elephants, of course, you know, we have zoos in the United States, and I had seen elephants up close when I had gone to Sri Lanka, but never in their natural habitat like that, just, you know, hanging out in the wild, doing what they do. And it was just, it was just fascinating for me. And I can tell you that the U.S. military team that I embedded with, they loved it as well. This is something that everybody who has a part of it in the U.S. military has loved and has advocated for. The problem is budget cuts and the budget situation with the military. And because U.S. Africa Command is such a small command, you know, you've got such big problems in the Middle East. You've got to shift towards the focus with a potential fight against China in the Pacific or Russia in Europe. Africa often gets forgotten a little bit because there is such a small presence there. And the concern is that because these teams are small, 3-4-person teams when they go out, that these activities could be cut in the future when they have to prioritize. Do we need to help with counter-poaching, or do we need to help with the fight against the Islamic extremists here, you know, in Somalia, for example, or in Niger? So that is a big concern that I know that people in Africa Command are going to be watching carefully. And I will be watching as well. I keep asking, you know, are there any more activities going on? Because we just have to wait and see where the funding goes. And this, for me, was a very long process. I actually started talking about counterpoaching activities with officials at the Pentagon in 2016. And I had wanted to go for years, and there was a North Carolina National Guard team that was supposed to be going in 2017, and then that got canceled because of funding priorities. So even before coronavirus, even before there were these shifts going on with the Trump administration wanting to shrink the presence in Europe and in Africa, before all that, there were already these kind of hints that there could be cuts. So we really are going to have to watch and see, because this is something that has been proven to be effective. The minister can agree with me there, I'm sure, that they have seen positive results because of this training. And it's a very small thing to do. It doesn't cost a lot of money, but it does kind of fall as one of the last priorities that the U.S. military is looking at.
Minister White, can you comment?
Yeah, I mean, I agree that if you look at not just the poaching, but you look at kind of terrorism in Africa, it's been moving south through the continent over the last few decades. And the new frontier, obviously Boko Haram are in northern Nigeria, they're in northern Cameroon and so on. And so the next frontier is the Congo Basin forests. And investing in keeping them out will be so much more cost effective than trying to win back territory that has been lost. And as we look at the implication of terrorist groups in ivory and gold trafficking, as we look at, you know, the kind of the worrying increase in piracy issues out in the Gulf of Guinea, I think there's a lot to be said for investing ahead of the wave. And I think in Africa in particular, there's a very clear link between natural resource governance and peace and security. If you look across Africa, countries that have got a lot of elephants tend to be countries with stronger democratic processes, stronger governance. And the countries that have lost their elephants are the countries that have slipped into civil strife and civil war. And so that link between natural resource governance and stability is very, very clear across the African continent. And so investing in anti-poaching missions or investing in the fight against timber thieves or gold miners or illegal fishing is not just an investment in conservation in natural resources. It really is an investment in the long-term sustainability of the continent and in peace and security on the African continent and in even in you know, the issues of climate change, because if you lose, if you look at countries that have lost their elephants, they've also then lost their forests. And if you lose your forest, then that's a huge huge detriment to the fight against climate change. And so a country like Ivory Coast, named for the elephant, lost almost all of their elephants. They have about 50 left, I think, and they're down to 3% forest cover because they lost control of those natural resources. So let's work together to invest in maintaining the forest governance and keeping those forests and the wildlife intact, rather than trying to put things right once we've lost control.
Minister White, what has been the reaction in terms of partnership with your international partners? How has been their reaction towards this anti-poaching effort that your administration is embarking upon?
I mean, we get strong support. Obviously, we're talking about U.S. military, but U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. Forest Service, U.S. Park Service have all helped us over the years. U.S. Fish and Wildlife are still our biggest single donor. But we've also had engagement from the EU, from the British government have committed, and many of our military training sessions with the US Marines were joint sessions with British military as well. So there are many partners. The Russian government last year provided guns and ammunition for the fight against anti-poaching. So there are many partners out there who do see this link between poaching, natural resources, good governance, peace and security. And I think particularly because of that, and because the President Ali Bongo Ondimba, who was formerly a Minister of Defense, is so eloquent on these issues, I think we are getting some good support from many of our partners.
Carla, all in all, what was your take on your experience in Gabon with regards to the anti-poaching effort, with regards to the anti-mining effort to safeguard and protect the wildlife and safeguard the environment?
That's a great question. If I had to sum it up in one word, I would probably say hope. That was my biggest takeaway. There is a lot of hope in Gabon that what they're doing is going to be the thing that's needed for all of Africa, because, you know, as we discussed, they have the majority of the African forest elephant population. And if they can make it work, then hopefully they can help others to make it work as well. I know that everyone that I spoke to on the American side were also very hopeful that this would work. And they were hoping that they could keep everything up and keep the pressure on the poachers, because that, no matter if you're dealing with any sort of criminal activity, if they have pressure on them, then they cannot execute plans to attack elephants, attack people, steal money, launder money. There's the whole gambit of that. And so that is AFRICOM's top focus. It doesn't have to be a direct link to, it doesn't have to be shooting at an Islamist extremist. It could be preventing the poacher who has absolutely nothing to do, he thinks, with Islamic extremists. But the money that he's making, a piece of that goes up the chain and then does help these terror groups that are, you know, wreaking havoc on the populations, several of the populations across Africa. So that was my biggest takeaway. And it will be interesting to see in the coming years if hope can turn into more success, because as the minister has said, they're doing a great job, but it's still pretty terrifying when you look at the numbers of the elephants that are lost every month. And you think about how long it takes for these elephants to reproduce. It's not on our side. There's just a long process it takes for these elephants to reproduce and for more elephants to become available. So if you slow down at all, you're not helping the situation. So that's something that I think we will take away from this, is that the pressure needs to remain. The hope needs to turn into action and more action as we continue to go through this fight for Gabon's forest elephants.
Mm. Professor White, a brief reaction to what Carla said.
I think that's very perceptive. I think there is hope. I think the fact that people are starting to understand, people in Gabon and elsewhere, and starting to understand these links between, exactly as she said it, that we don't have terrorists here from Mali, but some of our gold and ivory is going to Mali and ends up supporting those terrorist groups. And so I think the fact that the US government, the US military are standing shoulder to shoulder with us reassures us that people are taking this seriously. The fact that we have 50% of Africa's forest elephants in 10% of the rainforest, that's both a good and a bad message. It's a message of hope for Gabon. There's a similar message in northern Congo, but if you look at the rest of the African forest elephant range, we've lost 90% of the other forest elephants on this continent in the last 15 years. And so there is a very severe challenge. And it's a collective challenge. It's not something that the Congo Basin countries are going to be able to deal with all on their own, because it's really not a local problem. It's an international problem. It's an issue of international organized crime, and we have to fight it in that way. And I think whilst we talk more and more about wildlife crime being up there with drugs and human trafficking and so on, I still feel that the police forces of this world don't take it quite as seriously. And so my hope is that by putting the spotlight on it, that we will push governments and police forces to take wildlife crime more and more seriously. Perhaps not just because of the wildlife issues, but even the health issues. COVID-19, which is a wildlife health issue at its base.
Yeah, before we go, Professor White, pragmatically speaking, what are some of the benchmarks you want to see, or your administration wants to see, in terms of effectively carrying out some of the measures you implemented to say, all right, we're going the right way, or we're moving at the right pace?
I'd like to see ivory prices coming down through collective international effort, and that is the case. We've gone from ivory that was up to about $150, $200 a kilo down to about $25, $30 a kilo today. I want to see fewer gun battles, fewer exchanges of gunfire between my echo guards and poachers, because we've started to remove the threat of poaching and deal with the situation. I want to see fewer incidences of illegal forestry, because all of these illegal networks are linked. And so if they're making money off illegal timber or illegal gold, they're also going to make money off illegal ivory. I want to see even more kind of inter-administration collaboration within Gabon, and even more inter-governmental collaboration across the region, because we have to fight this regionally as well as locally.
Thank you very much. On that note, our distinguished guests are Professor Lee White and VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. Thanks to our audience for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. I'm Peter Clotty. Join us next week.